Eskimo Story.
This is a true story, and one that I think should have been heard long ago. The man who tells it is Alec Ritchie, and he lives in the fishing village of Gourdon, halfway between Montrose and Stonehaven. Alec Ritchie is now 72, but in April 1908, he was a young man starting out on a voyage to Greenland on board the whaler Snowdrop.
All our crew were drunk, from the captain to the cook, except myself. We left Dundee on the Saturday, and we were off Aberdeen on Sunday morning. From the time we left Aberdeen, we only took 13 days to Greenland. And then we started to fish for white whales, walrus, seals. We took anything we could get, anything that was of any value. That was about halfway up Greenland. We could see Disco Island, or Big Island, about 100 miles to the north. We had a motor engine aboard that ship. I believe that was one of the first motors that ever crossed the Atlantic. We were to try and go to a settlement that our owner had, the south side of Cumberland Gulf, what in Eskimo they called Signaya. Eventually we got down there and we took the whole Eskimo population on board. That was a custom that the whalers had. They took a lot of Eskimos aboard for to work for them, you see. They knew the customs of the seal and the bear and everything better than we did. So we took aboard 65 men, women and children. That was the whole village, even their dogs. So we had a full ship.
A full ship, all right, because by that time their cargo included more than 600 walrus and 600 seals, as well as skins from polar bears and furs from the Arctic fox. But on the 19th of September, they ran into a gale.
We were watching a chance to run back to Signaya to land all our Eskimos at their own home when this gale sprung up and drove us ashore. We started our mother engine to try and help her to go ahead, but it was no use. Just before we entered the broken water, we put the women and children down in the hold so that they wouldn't be washed off the deck. When the ship struck, the captain asked, "Is there any of you think that you could manage to go ashore with a rope?" And I said, "Well, yes, I'll have a try." So he says, "All right." He said, if you do get ashore, you'll have to come back." And I thought, well, that was rather a tall order to come back after you did get ashore. I thought if I got ashore, it would be a good enough day's work. So anyhow, I did get to the beach and I tied the end of the rope to a big boulder and I hauled myself back hand over hand. But we got every one of these people ashore and we didn't lose nor hurt one of them.
The place they were shipwrecked was at the south end of Bear Sound opposite Hall's Island, a long, long way from any settlement.
That storm lasted 4 days. At the end of the fourth day, there was one man, an Eskimo man, went up to the high hill at the back of her tent, and he went up to this high hill, and he was looking out from where the ship was lying, and he saw something white under the water. Our dinghy had many holes in it, but we patched it up with bits of skin, and we went out in it, and this was one of our whale boats. And after we got ashore, we consulted what we would do, now seeing we'd got on board. Decided that we would go up Frobisher Straits, and the Eskimo told us at the head of Frobisher Strait the land was Nara. We could travel across to Husband Bay. It took us 7 days to get to the top of Frobisher Straits in the boat. So we hauled up our boat and wrecked it a small tent to lie till morning. During the night it came away a gale from the north with snow, and when we tried to get out in the morning, the snow was up at the top of our tent. So that finished that. Our Eskimo guide, he wouldn't go no further now. So we went back to where the ship was wrecked, and the whole crew of us were going to try and come home by the Labrador coast. So we set out the following day, and we landed on an island off the coast. It was very stormy and we had to take shelter on this island. After a few days, the wind seemed to be increasing. The captain said, "I don't think this is going to do, boys. We'll get away back to where the ship was lost, and we'll go north to Signay." That was the intention. So we had to go back with the skipper. And when we got back where the ship was wrecked, all the Eskimo had gone away to walk to Signay, which was about 90 miles farther north. We were either 5 or 6 days in reaching Signay. But when we got there now, there was no food. So we just had to do what the Eskimo did. We had to live on chance. If they got a seal, we would get a share from them. When an Eskimo man gets a seal, he brings it home and he takes off the portion they're going to eat and goes to the door of his tupik or his snow house, and he shouts to the whole community, "Inuits kait uyung. Inuits kait uyung." That's everybody come and get a feed. That's translated in our language. So I stayed with these people from the time we lost the ship. That was from September until February.
And he learned to hunt as well as live with the Eskimos. One day he decided he would go by himself to look for seals, but that was more dangerous than he knew.
I didn't get any, and I started to walk back. I thought it would be dark before I got to the Eskimo village. And I was walking quick, and it appears there had been a crack in the ice right in my track. And all of a sudden I just dropped right down into darkness, utter darkness. And when I came to myself, I knew it, I was in water, and I thought, now this is the last. I didn't sink, I kept myself afloat. So when I gathered my senses, I took off my cap and I threw it up. And then I had my rifle on my back, I took it off and pushed it up so it would fall on the ice. Then I took off my cartridge bag and threw it up. Now I said, how am I going to get out? And I took a bit of a jump up, and the points of my fingers just catched on the edge of the ice like that. Then I put up my left hand and grabbed my wrist, and I pulled myself up a bit till I thought I was high enough to get my other hand on the edge of the ice. And I gradually pulled myself up, and first I got one elbow on the ice and then another. And then I made a great effort to fall forward. I'm telling you, I thought it was a miracle to go out of the water. Well, now I had to get home to this Eskimo village, and I had to make a big detour round about this crack. I broke the ice all the way along till I got on my journey again. And when the Eskimo saw me, they were amazed after they heard me tell my story. After that day, they called me Kiviakto. That was their name. Kiviakto means man that was nearly drowned.
Alec Ritchie owed his life to these Eskimos, for they stripped him of his frozen clothes and warmed him back to life. He lived as they lived, ate as they ate, and slept as they slept.
The man that I stayed with, his name was Gudidliak, and his wife's name was Comney. And his mother's name, Lukta. She was an old, a very old woman. We stayed at Signay until the 16th of December 1908. Six families were making ready for to go away during the winter. They generally travel about looking for forage and food, you see. And so my man, the man that I was staying with, he was going too. So I had to go along with him and all. The day that we were going to go away, we had everything packed and was just on the point of moving off when the owner of our ship came down, and he was carrying a big bag, and he said to me, he says, "You're not going away, are you?" I said, "Yes." I said, "I'm going away, Mr. Grant." He says, "I wouldn't go if I were you." "Oh, but," I says, "I'm going." So he says, "Here you are then, here's a bag of biscuits." And he says, "There's 50 cartridges for your rifle." Well, that night after we had travelled all day, I believe we had We'd done about 20 miles. I said to Goody Leac, go and call the natives. Tell them to come and have a feed. So he went to the door and he cried, Inuits, kaid uyung, kaid uyung. So we ate every biscuit. I remember our engineer, Jimmy Smith was his name. He said to me, he says you shouldn't have given away all the biscuits, you should have kept some. I said, what for? He said, we would have had a biscuit now and again. Man, I said, Jimmy, we have to stay with us Eskimo people, and we have to be dependent on them. And I says, if they saw us eating a biscuit and not offering them, I says, what would they think? And he says, that's true enough.
All the time they were hunting, the Eskimos were trekking towards Hudson Bay. Alec Ritchie remembers how on Hogmanay 1908, he and his party were snowed up for 4 days, and at the end of that time had to cut their way out through the top of their snow house. In February, the Eskimos met two other families from the bay, and it was agreed that Alec should join this other group and continue his journey with them.
I'd been travelling since the middle of December, travelling every day, because they're always shifting about looking for new hunting fields. They pointed out the place we were to make for a glacier, what they call the Grinnell Glacier. And the day before we reached our destination, I got very, very tired. And I couldn't keep up with them. And they told me to hang on to the back lashings of the sledge. And I did that, but I had to let go, and many times I fell. So I told them to go away and leave me. I was tired and weary and hungry and everything. Night was coming on, and if they didn't get to the land before dark, the dogs wouldn't go up, you see. And they might not be able to get a snow house made on the east floor. So away they went. And I lay there, and I thought, well, what a struggle I've had, and here I am, I'm going to be frozen to death or die. I knew that. There was no other help. And I lay on that ice, perishing with cold, nearly frozen. And I prayed that help would come somehow. I didn't know how I was going to get help. And I had given everything up. I was just finished. And I thought I heard voices. And those two men came with 7 dogs. They had to carry their dogs through this broken ice after they built their houses and come and look for me then, you see. And the first thing that they told me, well, they said they didn't expect to get me alive. They thought I'd be frozen by the time they would reach me. And they took me to their houses and they treated me, gave me what food they could, and took off my frozen clothes and gave me nice warm soft clothes to wear. They said to me if I could manage to stick it out, that I was the only white man that had ever crossed this glacier at that time. I think Archibald Fleming crossed it once, but I think it was farther north that he crossed. It took him a fortnight. We were 4 days, if I can remember rightly, on the glacier.
The journey down the other side of the glacier was less difficult, and they pushed on with their dogs and sledges to Hudson Bay itself. But there was no food to be found there. So Alec Ritchie moved on again, this time with a family going to a place called Lake Harbor. For 2 days they had nothing to eat, and on the third day all that they had was walrus skin. Now this was the third Eskimo family he had stayed with, and they reached Lake Harbor after another hard and hungry journey. But then he describes his awakening the next morning.
My face all seemed to be queer somehow, and I asked the people if there was anything wrong, and they said yes, my face was very much swelled. And I grew ill, and I was 21 days that I didn't know nothing. They counted 21 sleeps. They count their time by sleeps. And when I began to get well again, the snow houses were melting. That was from the 1st of April, you see, and 21 days added on to that. That made it to nearly the end of April. The snow houses began to melt, and I was in a pit, so they cut out a hole in the snow house and pushed on a sledge and lifted me bedclothes, sleeping bag and everything on the sledge and took me down to their tupik, or skin tent, as they call it. I stayed there for a while then, and the summer was beginning to come in, and the Eskimo, they were getting restless again to go away down for hunting. And they said they were going down to the Saddleback Islands in the hope of meeting the whaler active from Dundee. So one day we went away, and I sat on the boat and steered while the people on the boat rowed with the oars, and if there was any wind, sometimes we sailed a little with the sails.
The whaler active did call at the settlement, but even then, 2 months later, Alec Ritchie was still a very sick man.
I don't remember the date, but I think it was the end of June. I was so weak I could hardly climb up the side ladder. When I got aboard, all the crew came and they shook hands with the new Eskimos, you see, and I did the same. And I saw three men that I had been shipmates with in the snowdrop the previous year. And there was one standing close beside me. His name was Jim Scott, an old man. And I said to him, after I'd shaken his hand, he was about to turn and go away, I said, Jimmy, don't you know me? And he ran down to the cabin and told the captain to come up at one of the snowdrop's crew was on board. And he came over and he says, are you a white man? I said, yes, sir, I am. Oh. So he took me immediately down his cabin. But before he took me down below, he took me by the back of the neck, with the hood of my coolie tongue, and lifted me and put me in a stale yard for weighing. It was hanging on the spanker boom, and I weighed 7 stone, as I was, but that was all my clothes and boots on. My back was all broken, you know, the skin was all broken. I reckon it was scurvy that I had. I know it was something terrible at nights when you was in the lying amongst the skins, itching, you know.
The captain of the active put Alec Ritchie ashore again and told him he would pick him up at the end of the whaling season. But as it happened, another ship came first.
About the beginning of September, I saw a little ship come up the ford one day, so I ran down to the shore, and there was a few Eskimo getting a boat ready, so I went off to the ship with them. And when we got aboard of her, we found out that she was the St. John's schooner, Lorna Doone. She belonged to Dr. Granville. And there was 3 missionaries aboard of her. There was one in the name of Reverend Ernest Peck, and the other man was a name Bilby, and another man was the name of Fleming, Archibald Fleming. So I said to them, when are you going home with this ship? And the old man, Peck, he turned around and he said, who was that that spoke? I said, it was me, sir. I said, when are you going home? So he says, I thought you was an Eskimo. Oh no, I said, I'm a Scotchman.
The Lorna Doone took Alec Ritchie to St. Anthony, Newfoundland. From there, he went to St. John's in a ship called the Prospero, and finally, he was taken on board the liner Siberia, which arrived at the tail of the bank in November 1909, 19 months after he had set out from Dundee on the ill-fated Snowdrop. Today, 51 years later, it is still the most important experience of his life, one that he remembers with clarity and exactitude. Listen to him now as he relives that last parting from his friends who had cared for him so well and so lovingly.
Well, when we left, everyone of the Eskimo came down to the beach to say goodbye. And the word that they said for goodbye was "tabodit." That's goodbye in Eskimo, "tabodit." When they welcome you, they say chaimo. And when they say goodbye, tabodit. So I just had to say tabodit. And I never forgot these people all my life. I've always wished like it I could have been able to go back and repay them, you see. But it was a thing that was impossible.